Morning. You look beautiful. Those glasses are everything.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Likewise, this is so good to finally see your face and hear your.
Likewise, Dr. Vicki Johnson has been singing your praises. And
Oh, thank you.
I've been checking you out on social, and I'm grateful you're here. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And I've heard a lot of great things about you, from Dr. Vicky, from Loretta. Loretta Edwards Wilson
Oh,
called me
yes.
and said,
Oh,
"Oh, I
my
think you're going to do
gosh.
sunrise." I do a lot of work with
Me too.
Loretta. I just did her
Oh.
latest film with BET Plus. I was the production therapist on her film.
I love that you are doing, I've never even heard of production therapy. So that one, excuse me, I moved yesterday. And so one, I have boxes. I'm still moving. I moved yesterday, but back to my question, what exactly is production therapist? Is it what it sounds like?
Yes. So I work with the cast and the crew during pre-production, during filming, and during post-production. So
Okay.
with the cast, sometimes when they get the script and they're doing like their character breakdowns and their script analysis work, there's some themes that can be in the script that may be triggering to them due to their lived experiences. And especially if one
Yeah.
is a method actor, they may have to tap into their lived experiences to authentically tap into the character's mind, their feelings, and their thoughts. And sometimes, people have a hard time disconnecting and they get trapped into their character to where the mind
Wow.
doesn't know what's real and what's not. So
Wow.
working with them before they even start filming to identify potential trigger marks, to give them strategies up front, but then to help them during filming. And again, it's just not for the cast, it's for the crew as well, because it's long hours on set and
Yeah.
deal with a lot of dynamics. And sometimes it can be hard for people in the industry to go to the producers or the directors and say, "Hey, I'm struggling right now." Because you can be easily replaced, and it depends upon the personality of those persons that are in charge on set. So giving them language and helping them manage that, and then post-production, after you safely come out of that, some things may be there residue-wise. So I still work with them once they're done filming. So with Loretta, she brought me on during post-production to work with a lot
Okay.
of the cast and crew. Because that film dealt with foster care, and a lot of the actors grew up in the foster care system.
Oh no.
So it brought up a lot of things for them and a lot of things for the crew who also had experiences in the foster care system. So sometimes you don't realize,
Wow.
it is something I know I'm gonna touch on today. Sometimes you don't realize the residue until you're triggered. You're like, "Wait,
Oh.
what's that? I didn't wait."
Yes.
Emotional, response to this, and didn't
Yes,
know
because
what.
you stuff it away a lot of time,
Yes, and
especially in our community.
know how to do that. And a lot of times, it's until something happens or until it feels like our worlds are falling apart that we pay attention. And so, it's very much so proactive work instead of reactive. But a lot more people in the industry are being responsible in their storytelling and taking care of their cast and crew. So I
I
just
love
went
it.
to Essence and spoke during the Essence Film Festival on mental health in the media and the need for it. So it's
That's
definitely
fantastic.
what is needed.
How did you get into production therapy? It sounds so good.
It's a mixture of
That's so needed.
just like that quote that I really live by, like the arts has always been a part of
Oprah.
my life. And I really used cinema and music to heal, and in watching that, because even as a child, I would take a break from reality and tap into something that I wasn't experiencing to help me cope, to help me heal. So I know the power of storytelling. And
Yes.
it's so important to merge to two. It's so fitting because I have a passion for this and I have a passion for seeing people well. So merging those two, it just made sense. And the first person I got the chance to work with was Loretta. So yeah, it's something that is needed. And Keisha Knight Pulliam just shared it while she was at Essence. She said, "I needed a you when I was growing up because I didn't have
Yes.
nowhere to go." So a lot
Yes.
of times when you see people in the business and they go, array, or they're having these mental breakdowns or quote unquote hard to work with, it's because they don't have those safe spaces to share what's really going on.
Absolutely. And the same thing, I love what you're doing. That's the same thing with Sunrise for Black parents. I didn't at the time going through all this. It was drama because I made it drama, but it really was drama because my son was smoking weed and not going to school and all the things. But I didn't know back then, 5 years ago, the power of communicating and listening and really getting to
Completely.
know him till now. So to your point, but Sunrise was is that still? It's a safe space to come together and learn and heal from each other. But and you're right, that quote is so powerful because
I live by it.
it's so good. I may have to search and reapply. With PNG, they taught us something called search and reapply. It's not called stealing, it's called searching and reapplying. So if you see something working, something, and it was like business stuff, if you see something, a pricing strategy working, we should reapply it to our brands. I'm like, okay, but that quote is so deep and so powerful.
Need it. So I want to ask you one question because Dr.
Sure.
Vicky already knows this. I'm a very transparent person. I just believe that transparency heals.
Yes.
So as you probably read in my bio, I am a suicide survivor.
Yeah.
I attempted three times. And that's a part of my journey. So I didn't know when you opened up if you wanted to just give a disclaimer, trigger disclaimer if anyone, needs a moment to retreat, to regroup, to come back, that that's okay due to the nature of today's call, because I know some of those themes may come up.
Yes.
Or however you want to work.
Interestingly, give me 1 second because I think, sometimes there are people on that are dealing, there's a variety of people on each week. So there are about 800 people that are in our village. But depending on the topic, there might be 30 people, there might be 50 people, there might be 20 people. It just really depends. It also could be people sleeping in sometime. So I don't know. And I'm just looking to see something really quickly because, well, I normally play it by ear and I'm also really, really transparent too. And so I think that's why people enjoy coming because they know we're not here trying to it's not that trips, purses, and shoes situation, which is what I call my old self. That's all I cared about, trips, purses, and shoes. No, that's not what's here. This is like the real deal, raw. My son tried to end his life twice. So I have had ideation, especially back then, going through all that. I've never attempted, but there are a lot of people that I think have or are dealing with children who may have died by suicide. And but then there's some people, there was a woman 2 weeks ago. So it depends. There was a woman 2 weeks ago from Chicago who said she was on her way to do a surgery. She's a surgeon. She said, I have this major surgery. I'm on my way to the hospital right now. And she said, but my son is 24, is suicidal, and I don't know what to do. So I'm not a therapist. All I could say was to call 988. But it happened to be that that particular call, we had a licensed therapist on. So that was helpful because she was talking to her and giving her some language and some things she could say to her son. But I just shared that to say, Candace, the people here are all in need of healing, what you said, your quote. And people have different reasons for being here. Sometimes it's because they're like, I might kill my son or my daughter. There's people with daughters here. It just depends.
That's something that is definitely something that we have to talk about and not sugarcoat
Too.
under the rug.
And not have stigma around it, not have stigma. I think that's the thing for our community. There's so much stigma, and it doesn't have to be that. So now Dr. Vicky did a your full bio, which is beautiful, is not what I was going to go through today. Do you want me to read the whole thing?
Oh no, do whatever.
Okay. Okay, so she's but I don't think she mentions Candace Wright's either. Let me see. You were in the Air Force. Okay. My son was at the Naval Academy and just resigned. And he is going to Howard, and I could not be happier.
Yeah, I got my master's at Howard. That's amazing.
Yes. So I'm thrilled about that. It's a long story, though, but Navy versus Army was quite a thing.
He made the right choice.
I think, you know what? God made the choice. When he told me that's the only place he wanted to go, and the only reason my son, my 19-year-old, the youngest, is a cutter and has his whole arm scars. And I didn't know that until he was probably 16, maybe, but his anxiety, depression, and has a lot of pressure because he's a really great swimmer. And the Navy came up, Naval Academy came up to me at the meet and said, "We would love to have you." He took his first offer. And I kept saying, "I really think you should do some research and just understand what is important." He got there and it wasn't for him. He couldn't take his ADHD medicine. He couldn't, they don't want all that's a longer story, but I say that to say, I give you all mad respect having gone through that. Oh my gosh, it's
Thank
a lot.
you. It is.
He was only there a year. How long were you in the military?
I was in for 3 years and I got out after my second suicide attempt was while I was serving. So I'm gonna get into that too. Three attempts. And my last and final one, as I always say, was in 2019.
COVID, the beginning of COVID. Oh, I got chills and
And it's so many people, even women that I know that's going to be on the call today, and I'm going to get into it because sometimes we put ourselves last as parents. We put
that's
ourselves
right.
last. So, and then other things come up within us, and having to manage that while still being mommy is a lot.
That's right. It is a lot. It is a lot. Well, it's 8:59. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, really. Thank you.
Where do you live, Candace?
Crofton.
Oh, you're here. Would you mind? Can I get your address? I want to drop something in the mail for you.
Yes. So
You may have given it to Vicki already, but I'm right over here. Okay.
it's 1428 Flatwood, one word, court.
Flat as in F as in Frank.
Flatwood, flat surface, Flatwood Court, Crofton, Maryland, 21114.
21114. Okay, great. So we record. Obviously, you heard it when you came on, and we do a edited version of the call today. So there are a lot of people that will never come off camera or speak or whatever. Then there's some that speak every week. So it just depends. But thank you so much for being here. And it dribble drabbles in as always on Sunday morning. So again, I appreciate you. Let's see. I recognize some faces and people. Let me just make sure nothing. All right, I'll get going. And you're a psychotherapist here. Are you taking new patients?
I have a waiting list right now, so they can still reach out.
All right, we're gonna meet all and get started. Ah, a lot of birthday reminders. There's like 10 people I know that have birthdays today. All right, let's sit up straight. Okay, here we go. Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our weekly Sunrise Project call, where it's always a safe space for us to learn and to listen and to share and to be vulnerable and to ultimately heal ourselves, our children, and our families. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I am so delighted this morning to have with us Candace Washington, who's also known by her pen name, Candace Wrights. She was born in Selma, Alabama, and is a proud mother of two boys. Her eldest has been diagnosed with an intellectual disability. She is also an author, a minister, a board certified, licensed social worker, psychotherapist, suicide survivor, and a United States Air Force veteran. Amazing. She is also the founder and CEO of Restorative Minds Therapeutic and Wellness Services. She is also on the advisory board of Audaz Inc., a virtual reality program that teaches skills to manage anxiety based on cognitive behavioral principles. Candace has a passion for those of us who are dealing with trauma, with grief, with suicidal ideation, and anxiety. Most recently, Candace was featured at Essence Festival in New Orleans, highlighting the unique role she has served as a production therapist, working with creatives on set. And I am excited to hear more about that. Welcome, Candace.
Thank you so much, Kelly, for having me. And good morning, everyone. And thank you for choosing yourself on this bright and early Sunday and prioritizing and pouring to yourself is so important. So, Kelly, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. Yes, and I appreciate you. And to get us started, I want to ask first question. The foundation of your work is rooted in a quote by Dr. Maya Angelou, the late great Dr. Maya Angelou, which is, "As soon as healing takes place, go out and heal somebody else." What significance does that quote mean to you?
It means a lot. It means that healing is not just for ourselves and our families. It extends to our community. And as everyone has heard, I'm also a licensed psychotherapist. And I always say I have been and I am on both sides of the couch. And as a mom of two amazing boys, Bryson and Braxton, my oldest was diagnosed with intellectual disability. And for those of you who are not familiar with intellectual disability, there are a lot of similarities between a child that has an intellectual disability and autism. One of the major differences is how Bryson processes information. He processes information a lot slower, but he's very much so high functioning. And so I say that to say, as a mom, a lot of times we prioritize our children, right, over ourselves. And, growing up as a child, I was very much so a high achiever. And I know a lot of us deal with what we call clinically achievement addiction, right? So as a child, I learned how to mask childhood trauma early on. I learned how to suffer in silence and I learned how to pour that pain into my academics. When I got older, I learned how to pour that pain into my career. Then when I became a mother, I learned how to mask that pain and pour it into my children. And one of the things I realized, now the mind is one of the most important parts of our being, Kelly. It's one of the most important parts, it's one of the most powerful parts. But it's also very fragile. It's also
That's right.
very fragile. And I believe that in the African American community, us as men and women, generationally and historically, we learn how to wear the cape and we learn how to
Absolutely.
wear it well. So
Yeah.
then it develops into Superwoman and Superman complex, right? That I always have to be strong. I always have to do what I have to do for my family. And that's what I did. So I pushed all of my experiences to the wayside. I suppressed them, and that became my defense mechanism was suppression and avoidance. And I turned to unhealthy mechanisms to heal, turned to alcohol, and developed an unhealthy relationship with alcohol where I started to abuse it. And I started to experience suicidal ideations at an early age, at 16. At 16, I tried to take my life and was not successful. And I kept going, got straight A's, went off to college, went to the Air Force, had Bryson, my oldest child. And then I dealt with sexual harassment and assault in the Air Force. And again, I went back to what I knew, which was alcohol. At that time, Bryson was 3, and I found out he had a developmental delay. And as a young mother, I didn't know how to respond to that. I didn't know how to deal with that. I saw things in Bryson at 2, and I got, the early intervention, but there was a lot of mom guilt. Did I not do what it is that I needed to do for my child? Did I not just do all the proper steps, right? So, because I never dealt with the childhood trauma, now I'm dealing with the things that are happening in the Air Force. Finding out Bryson had a developmental delay, and I was 23 with a 3-year-old in Fairborn, Ohio, by myself, and not getting that support suicidal ideation started to come back to me. And your life isn't worth living. Bryson would be better off without you. And I attempted for the second time by crashing my car. And wasn't successful, but was court ordered to go to a drug and alcohol treatment program. And you all would think that I would get it together after that. But again, that achievement addiction came up. That spotlight fallacy came up. And spotlight fallacy is when you feel like you always have to be on. You always have to be okay. You can't show your emotions and feelings. You're a Black woman. You're a mother. You're all of these things. So I had to be all of those things. And I never dealt with the things that caused me to go to the alcohol. Because a lot of times people see what's on the surface, our response to things, but no one's asking the questions. What's going on? Do you need help? Do you need support? Are you okay? Do you need help with your children? No one's asking those questions. So what do? You suck it up and you keep on going. And that's what I did. I sucked it up and I kept going. Then I got married. Then I had my second child, Braxton, and I got out of the military, married someone who was in the military, and we got stationed in Germany. And going through the pregnancy on top of marital conflict, the depression, it just started back, but I was pregnant. So this time I couldn't run to the alcohol. And when you don't have healthy coping mechanisms, it can cause you to have a break of from reality because you're not releasing what is happening internally. So the depression came back. And then after I had my second child, I dealt with postpartum depression. And I was very much so, Kelly, disconnected from my second child the first year of his life. And I was breastfeeding the first 4 months, but because I was dealing with, again, the pain I never dealt in childhood, never dealt with while I was in the Air Force, never dealing with in my present time within my marriage, I chose alcohol over breastfeeding my child because I needed that release, And the suicidal thoughts came right back. And after my husband said he wanted a divorce, I packed up the kids, we came back to Maryland, and I never had the opportunity to breathe. I had to come back. I had to put the kids into school. I had to find a job. I still had to support. I had to move back into my home. I had to do all these things while still suicidal, trying to find the right school for Bryson, right? Because a lot of us are parents of children that have spectacular needs. So I had to find the school that was appropriate for him, that had the resources to manage his IEP, all while suicidal. All while still parenting and still mothering, all while still having mental breakdowns, all while still planning to take my life. So by this time, I'm looking at life policies. I'm looking at different things to make sure that the kids are okay while I'm gone. 2019 was when I had my third attempt. And what was happening during that time, the children was away with their dad. And I know we see it sometimes in televisions, Kelly, you see a devil on one side and an angel on the other side.
Yes.
And I looked at the picture. He sent me a picture of the boys, and they were happy and they were smiling. I said, see, they'll be okay without me. They'll be okay without me. Then on the other side, God said, but if you make this decision, your pain ends, but their pain would just begin.
That's right.
When I realized that, I said, God, why do I keep dealing with suicidal ideations? Why do I keep dealing with this? He said, because you've been suffering in silence for all of these years. And a lot of us have never healed from a lot of our experiences as women, as men. We survived it.
That's right.
We survived it. We know how to be survivors. It's in our blood. That's who we
are. That's right.
We know how to survive. We know how to mask it. We know how to heal. And once I started putting language on things and started letting go of that mom guilt and saying, no, Candace, you're graced to raise an awesome child like Bryson.
That's right.
You're graced to raise an awesome child like Braxton. But it's okay not to be okay.
Right. That right there.
Once I gave myself permission, I had to give myself permission. No one else could give that to me. I had to say, I never healed from things. I have to give myself permission to heal. And I said, if I'm really going to do this, I have to do it soberly. I have to feel it. And that's what I did. I went back and got into therapy. And by this time, Kelly, I already had my master's in social. I had my bachelor's in psychology. I was a minister. I was all these things. And I had to realize that before I'm a mom before, I'm a clinician before, I'm a daughter before, I'm all of these things. I'm Candace.
Yes.
And just like all of us today have prioritized our Sunday to be here and rearranged our day for some of us to be here, we have to rearrange our lives to still be here.
That's right.
I had to rearrange my life in being able to say my humanity has no reflection of my gifts and my talents in me as a mother. But in order to pour into our children and to pour into our families and to pour into our community, we have to reshape the hierarchy in our lives and pour into us so they can get the beautiful overflow of us. We are the cup. And everyone around us is the saucer. We have to be able to pour into us. And for the first time, I paused and gave myself permission to breathe. And I did the work, not just in therapy, but in my relationships, in my language, being transparent and honest and saying, I need help with the children today. I'm not okay. I need a moment. And when I gave myself that permission, I started to see the shift in my thought process. I started to see the shift in my emotions. I started to see the shift in my behaviors. And here I am today, Kelly, 4 years sober, 4 years after that last suicide attempt. So that quote, as soon as healing takes place, you go out. And that's what God said. He said, detail every part of this journey, but this isn't the end. There's no period here. Now you go out and take, you have to shift it. You go out and you take what you have learned and what you know, and you put it into the community. And when we all come together, we are just sharing information with each other so that we can still breathe. So when I think about breath and breath work, when you take moments when you are under stress and everything seems like it's going disarray around you, you just give yourself a minute to just inhale and hold it and exhale it. It sends a message to your nervous system that you still have breath in your body. And if you still have breath in your body, that means that you still have a pulse. And if you still have a pulse, that means God still has a purpose for you. He still has a plan. So is every day going to be great? No, but is every day worth it? Yes. And reframing the mindset of when I'm having bad moments, even with Bryson, sometimes he's 16 now, and when he's overstimulated, when there's a lot going on, he can have mental breakdowns. And I have to know that his behavioral response is not a reflection of me as a mom, right? What do I have control over in this moment? Let me help him to breathe so that he can get through this moment. And I have to remind myself that these are just moments. It's not a reflection of a bad life, not a reflection of my parenting, it's not a reflection of my worth, that my worth is tied into my humanity, not my accomplishments.
That's
So there was a lot of shifting taking place, but it started with me prioritizing myself. It started there because, again, historically, I was putting everything else above myself, my academics, my career, my children, my family. And I had to realize when I hit that rock bottom in 2019, I said, God, I don't want to die. I want to live. I just want the pain to stop. I want to navigate life in such a way where I can breathe and I don't feel like I'm suffocating and I'm holding my breath. Many of us are holding our breaths. And as soon as we get away from the children, from the husband, from the wives, we go into that shower, we go into that car, and it just.
Yes. Breathe, Dr. Vicky put in the chat. Breathe, all caps.
Yes, giving yourself permission to breathe. So when I hear that quote, it lets me know that healing, we get to be the first partakers of it, but we don't get to be the last.
That's right.
We don't get.
What you do, well, go ahead. I was just going to say what you're doing by sharing your story, and thank you for being so vulnerable and so honest. And for sharing that, your journey, which many people may have had parts of that journey, or I'm sure all of us felt it deeply as you were talking, and sharing. And I'm curious about your childhood trauma, because as you mentioned growing up and always putting on a happy face and always focusing on your grades and work, schoolwork, and then it was work, and then it was. So, did you ever go back and deal with the childhood trauma and whoever it was, if there was a person that inflicted that trauma?
I had to. I think sometimes we forget about the little girl and the little boy inside of us.
That's right.
There's a familiar movie, Antoine Fisher, who
Yeah.
was also in the Navy, and Denzel Washington in that film played his psychologist. There was a poem that stuck out to me when you asked that question. It reminded me of this. He said, "Who's going to cry for the little boy? The little boy inside the man." And at the end of that poem, he said, "I'm going to cry for the little boy." It's so personal when you do your inner child work, because sometimes when you are triggered in your adult years, you revert back to childhood practices. You revert back to childhood responses. So if you was a child who retreated to their room when they were under distress, as an adult, you have more accessibility. You still retreat. You may just retreat in other ways. I
That's
had to realize that some of my behavioral responses in my adulthood was very much so connected to that little child of me that was still in bondage. So I had to go back and put language on the molestation. I had to go back and put language on the domestic violence that I witnessed. I had to go back and take hold of that little girl inside of me so that I could mother well, so that I could be well. Because some of the practices that we have in parenting stems from what we see in our childhood and what we were exposed to and what we may have personally experienced.
Right.
And sometimes we have to remind ourselves that this isn't that, that what we experience, we sometimes can project it on our children. And I started to see some of those things and I said, I have to go back. So I had to go back to the beginning. I had to start fostering conversations, with my family and saying that sometimes in the Black community, we don't give our children permission to be human. We don't give our children permission to express themselves. But they have feelings, they have emotions, they have thoughts. Those feelings and emotions don't just come up once they turn 18 and now they all of a sudden can have language. If we don't teach our children emotional intelligence and how to regulate at an early age throughout their childhood, then they grow up to become mothers and fathers and husbands and wives, and they'll disconnect from their families emotionally because we didn't give them permission to do so. So I had to realize and go back to childhood and realize that sometimes in our household, children are supposed to be seen and not heard. And we sweep things under the rug, and what goes on in this house, it stays here. So I learned how to be mute. So that mutism followed me in a lot of ways that when I was dealing with distress, I went internal instead of being external and putting language on it. So I had to go back, and I also had to release.
Had to unclick the mute button, basically. I love what you just said, putting our children on mute and giving, that's what we do so many times because that's what we were taught.
It's generationally and it's historically. It goes back, Kelly, it goes back all the way to slavery if you think about it. It really
Absolutely.
goes back. They didn't have permission to speak and to say, okay, that was their lives. So it trickled down. So then when our children
Absolutely.
respond to us and share their feelings, they're being disrespectful. No, they're being human. There's a way to, of course, the tone matters, the way they
That's
communicate
right.
with us, yes, but it's okay to express feelings.
And to listen to them and
Yes.
not look at them as this performance creature, which is how it sounds like you were raised.
And
So
it's how achievement addiction comes up.
achievement addiction, that's it.
Yeah, because you become addicted to your achievement because that's where you find your worth.
Also allows you to avoid any other pain that you might be dealing with if you just pour yourself into your work. 24/7.
And I like how you said that because sometimes people have this ideology that our mechanisms are like all the way far to the left. And it can be that, right? It can be some of those very destructive behaviors. But for some of us, we can throw it into our achievement. We can throw it into, retail therapy. We can throw it into running up our credit cards, all these different things. But being able to know that source is escapism. So I learned at an early age how to escape. So that followed me. So I had to go back. Sometimes we have to go back. And once we go back, we liberate those around us. So now I'm seeing my mom and my grandmother and those around me really start having in-depth conversations about things that happened to them growing up. Or even after my third suicide attempt, my mom asked me, and we talk about this publicly. She said, "Candace, why didn't you tell me?" And I said, "You didn't give me permission to. You didn't give me a chance to. I had to suck it up. I had to be the mom. I had to be the strong black woman that you raised." I never really saw maybe once or twice my mother cry. So I had my emotions. I thought I was so hypersensitive, and I thought I was developing what we call emotophobia, is when you feel as though you don't have the right to be emotional and feel your feelings, that you always have to be on. And I said, "That's how I was felt." And she said, "I thought I was protecting you." I said, "You were showing me how to escape from my reality." So we are fostering these conversations. And by doing that, it causes us as a community to no longer suffer in silence and take away that stigma. So when I was diagnosed in therapy with major depressive disorder and alcohol abuse and post-traumatic stress disorder, I took that as information. I didn't take that as my identity.
Yes.
I took it as information to say, this is what my body and my mind is responding to due to the years of unprocessed trauma. So for the first time, my past traumas and my present traumas are colliding, and this was the outcome of it. But it doesn't reflect my identity.
Right.
Right? But
Right.
I have to shift in that mindset so now I can pass that on to my children, that this is what you're dealing with. But in the word disability, there's also ability. So you have the ability to do these things that society would deem you inappropriate to do based upon what's on this paper. But again, I had to do my work first to be able to pour that into my child. So I had to go back to little Candace, because if I didn't, those parts of her that were wounded are going to show up in me presently.
That's right.
So we have to do our inner work to be better first as men and women, but then as mothers, then as, you know, employees, whatever it is that you are doing out here in the world, you need you too.
That's it. Off mute. And you need to be doing that out loudly
Yes.
and not on mute. That's what I found so powerful about what you just said. I also see emotional regulation is key. Emotional regulation, that's so true. So true. So you talked about your son. We have two sons, and one of whom is diagnosed with an intellectual disability. And you're also a therapist, which is amazing. How do you dispel the myths around and stigma that are still in our community around disability, and also mental health challenges, and also suicide? Like, this whole space is still like this big X over it.
Yeah. One, fostering conversations like we're doing this morning is so important, because mental health has no face, no race, no class, no faith, no denomination. You can have $1 million in your bank account and still be very much so depressed and suicidal. I think once you put language on it, and once you allow yourself the transparency of fostering those conversations, healing takes place. Because I hear all the time, if I'm honest, you don't look like someone that was an alcoholic. You don't look like someone that tried to take their life three times. You don't look like someone that was dealing with depression. And I said, what does it look like?
What does it look like?
What does it look like? Because a lot of times people are looking at external things and not understanding what things are happening internally. And the mind doesn't care about any of those things.
Right.
So when we foster these conversations and give education, a lot of times people may not even come to myself as a therapist or come to their family members or go to their faith-based leaders due to that stigma of, how are they going to look at me? Are they going to judge me? Are they going to condemn me? In the faith world, are they going to demonize me? right? But knowing that, again, we are human with feelings, emotions, and thoughts. And though the mind is very powerful, it's also very fragile. And I think for me, I had to go back spiritually and know that mental health is not new to God, and it's all throughout the Bible. And in therapy, when I was introduced to the story of Elijah and how he was suicidal and depressed, God's response was the is the blueprint. He responded with care, compassion, and empathy, and he did three things. He gave Elijah time to rest, because as we know, when we're dealing with a lot, sometimes you have so much on your plate, all you want to do is sleep and crash.
That's right.
He attended to his physical needs, because what's happening mentally shows up in us physically. Then he said, come and get away with me. And he started asking questions. Then after he asked them questions, I said, God, why would you ask Elijah questions? He said, because I wanted to give him the opportunity to put language on his pain and to know that I care. Sometimes in our community, people just want to know that you care. Everyone all isn't always looking for solutions and quick fixes. They just want to know that someone sees them, sees their pain, and they care. That disarms people to do the work, but they just want to know that you care and that you can hold space for them. Then after that, just like the Dr. Maya Angelou quote, God sent Elijah back out. So that lets us know that we can rest, retreat, and reset as many times as we need to. People need to know that and give them that education. And when you give people the education, it causes them to reframe their thought process around mental health. We don't blink an eye when it comes to our physical health. And if something is wrong and you have to take blood pressure medication or you have to go see the doctor, I say this as a therapist as well. If you need medication management, if you need psychotherapy, if you need to go see a sound healer, if you need to go do breath work, if you need to vacate, do what works for you. Therapy isn't the solution for everybody.
That's right.
It's not the solution for everybody. For some people, they may need to do some sound baths, some yoga. They may need to tap into their ecosystem of support. Education and fostering that helps eradicate the stigma. As it pertains to disability, that is something that I believe is ongoing, just like, mental health. And I think for me, as a mom, giving my son permission to be him and not shielding him.
Right.
And no longer like letting go, if I'm honest, of embarrassment,
Yes.
shame, and guilt. And I think when people see that, it educates them in real time through what it is that they're seeing. So when he has mental breakdowns, it's in the past, I would try to get him like out away from everyone so they couldn't see it. Right? Now
Yeah.
we're gonna sit right here, and if y'all wanna watch, y'all can do you, but we're gonna sit right here and I'm gonna help this, regulate my son's emotions right now and get him to breathe. So I think sometimes it's by, learned behavior and
Yes.
exposure and letting people see, just like all of us, we have our good days and our bad days, and our children, they're no different. They're gonna have their good and their bad days, in educating them on that. And really enforcing, I think for me, because I was so young, I got caught up in Bryson's weaknesses and the things I felt like he wasn't doing or couldn't do compared to his peers, instead of tapping into all of his beautiful strengths,
Yes.
nurturing and cultivating those strengths. So now when I speak and I share, we talk about all of those things that he is doing well, and he's very, independent. And I have to remind myself that my child is going to be okay. He
Yes.
has the tools that he needs. So helping our community see that and not being so label driven, again, knowing that, yes, this is what it is that he experiences, and this is the symptomology that goes along with it, but it's not his identity.
Right.
So by fostering these conversations, by giving education, and by normalizing our experiences. Like I said, every day isn't going to be rainbows and sunny skies. Sometimes you're going to have to cry and crawl your way through the day. And you also have to know that you don't have to dwell in the either or mentality, that it could be both and. And
Right.
once you start again shifting and putting that information out there, it really does help shift the stigma that's associated, here when it comes to mental health, the stigma that's associated when it comes to raising our spectacular children, and fostering those community and having allyship, having allies, that are around us that can support us. Because again, like I said, you need you too. I had to remind myself that, like, no, I need me too. I need support so that I can support him, and having those safe spaces. I know I saw one of my best friends on here. We talk about that because we all have children that are either on the spectrum or that has, special needs, that we created this safe haven that when we're not having good days, we can go and get that support, and it not be a reflection of us as mothers to say, hey, we having a moment today, and that's okay. And I think when we say it's okay not to be okay, those words are powerful because it allows us to tap into our humanity. And that's how we shift the culture. That's how we shift our community. That's how we heal our community. Because a lot of us suffer in silence out of shame, out of guilt, and we take ownership of things that are out of our control.
That's right. And it is all based on shame and guilt and what doesn't seem right on the surface, based on somebody else's definition of what success is supposed to be like, or what our children are supposed to be like, or what our relationships are supposed to be like, or all the things, and it's like, who defines that? So what I love about what you're saying is we define that for ourselves.
And it's also something too, when you said that I had to be honest with, and this part is grief, right? A lot of times when we think about grief, we think about the transition of someone's physical presence, but what's at the root of grief? Grief is loss. And sometimes we grieve our realities of what we thought life would look like, or what we thought our children should be and how they should be. So healthy grieving also allows us to normalize and dwell in that duality of gratitude, and also being honest and saying, I thought by now, or I thought, putting my child in this program, I would see X and Y change. Because it allows you not to stop, not to quit. It gives you a moment to pause, like I said, and retreat. So there was some healthy grieving along the way too, especially when you are pouring into your children all of the resources that you know how, and you don't always see the immediate result of that. Have to give yourself permission to grieve that, but then you also have to give yourself permission to keep going, to keep trying, to
Has to
keep
be
up,
both.
nurturing. It has to be both, because when you again push that underneath the rug, it can show up in your irritation. It can show up in your annoyances. It can show up in how you are mothering and fathering your child when they don't have control over that, right? So being able to grieve the parts of you that had this level of expectation is also very important.
Absolutely. And
Very
someone
important.
just said, I connect with that, having to have grief of a reality that I thought I'd have. And move through the stages of grief.
And I'm thankful you said that, because there are stages of grief. You have the denial, age, the shock. And I think for some of us with our children, if we're honest, especially when we started seeing early signs of things, it could have been that denial shock. No, they're just, slower at learning, or, no, I'm gonna give it, some more time. It's that shock, that denial. And then once reality sets in, you could have anger. You could have depression, right? And I had to go through all of those stages with Bryson. I had to go through the shock, because at that time, though I was dealing with everything that I was experiencing personally, I had a healthy pregnancy. I had a healthy childbirth. So I'm like, I did all the things. So at first, there was that shock, there was that denial, then there was anger. And I want to say to everyone on here, because a lot of times we give anger a bad rep, but anger is healthy. There's nothing that we feel that is unhealthy. You have the right to be angry. You have the
Yes, and we need to feel all of it, right? And I think sometimes go outside and scream or go somewhere in your house and scream to get it out.
Get it out. You have the right to be angry. It's what we do with the anger that's unhealthy, not the fact that we experience it.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
To be
Yeah.
angry, even as ra in raising your children, sometimes we just get angry. Being able to stop, pause, and retreat so that anger isn't projected onto those and displacing it onto those where it's not warranted. But knowing
Right.
that anger is healthy. So that's another stage of grief. Then you get to a space of acceptance. If I'm honest, it took me a while
Yes.
to accept. Took me a while to accept things personally. Took me a while to accept things Bryson. It took me a while. And I believe it was because I was ping-ponging between the shock, the anger, and the depression. And I'm trying to do all the things and sending him to all of these specialists and going to this occupational therapist and this speech therapist and getting him this IEP and doing all of the things. But again, it was because I was focused on those things that he wasn't doing well instead of looking at the plethora of things that
Right.
he is. And I realized what was at the root of that was the shame, was the guilt, was the
That's
embarrassment.
it. That's it. There's a woman named Shanti Das that runs a great organization called Silence the Shame. Yeah. And that's what it's all about, is silencing that shame, but not silencing ourselves or our children. And there's such a difference, right? Silence the shame from the external, but don't silence what we're going through, I think, because that really landed on me early. And I don't have time to share a story, but so many stories from growing up and learning to silence, not talk about it. And that's how we raise our children. No one really talks about anything. And what a shame that is. But I want to make sure I open up the floor for questions. There's a wonderful comment that says, I connect with that as well. Grieving who I hoped my child would be, but accepting and embracing who he is and finding gratitude in his strengths and his greatness. Yes, amen.
Love that.
That.
That's Sherry. Yeah, I love that she said that
Yeah.
because it's a journey, and I think sometimes we beat up on ourselves so much because
Yeah.
we feel as though that thought should be natural and automatic. That's what we should be thinking. And we have to be honest and deal with the things that's at the root of it.
Right.
And once we deal with the things that's at the root, we can shift to that notion. We can shift to that. And that's the final stage of grief, which is acceptance. And then you can go out of the grief stage and just be, and just
That's right.
sit,
I
and
just
just
be.
embrace and accept. And when I tell you to see Bryson flourishing in the way that he is, I think it has a lot to do with the shifts. It has a lot to do with me allowing Bryson to be Bryson in all of his beautiful ways.
And his beautiful mind,
Yes,
right?
yes. And give
Yeah.
him space to put language on that. So now we put language on those things and knowing that you have the right to feel how you're feeling and feeling your feelings, because if we don't, our children's emotions will be dysregulated and they won't know how to respond emotionally in an appropriate way. So, yeah, embracing our children's greatness and their abilities.
Their greatness and their abilities. I love that.
Yeah.
I want to open up the floor. We have a little bit of time left. So if anybody's on your phone, you can hit star six to come off of mute if you've dialed in, or you can hit the unmute button if you're on your computer. If anybody has a comment, a thought, a question for Candace with all this wisdom being poured into us this morning. Any questions, comments? I have a question. How do you recommend? I touched on this a little bit earlier, but how would you recommend approaching an elder who may be a parent who, was instrumental in a moment that really changed the trajectory of her life? And I'll share at this moment, it was an abusive high school situation, and the young man smacked the out of me, right? And I ended up running home. There was drama at the little corner store. And make the long story short, my mother hugged me for about 10 minutes. It felt like probably 2 minutes. But then she said, "Let's clean your face up and go get ready for dinner before dad gets home." Now, why does she do that? Of course, it's what you talked about, going back to slavery, trying to protect her husband, knowing he would go kill that boy and he would be in jail. So she knew that. And I knew that. I know that now, but we never talked about it to this day. That was 45, 50, 45, 40 some years ago. So, what would you recommend? How did you go back to your situation, the abusive situation? To clear that and have a conversation about it.
One of the things that I was thinking about as you were talking is how detailed you were in your memory, recollection. And a lot of times when we have experiences that leaves a mark, it can cause you to recall almost every detail of that experience. And that lets us know that it impacted us, the fact that you can go all the way back to that experience and really detail its impact. And starting there, knowing that those experiences that were never dealt with, it impacted us and it stayed with us. It stayed with us. And that is how I had to foster that conversation, is how even now in my adulthood, this situation still heavily impacted me and given language to the why.
Giving language to the why.
Language to the why. And also sharing with empathy and love what it is that I needed. Because there's two things I heard here. One, you was embraced, right? You shared that with me as, with us as it pertains to the embrace. But then you remember the aftermath of that embrace, of how you had to suck it up and go have dinner. Two things can be true. So acknowledging the fullness of the narrative, because you needed that embrace, but then there's also more that you needed, and knowing that that can be okay. And I think for me, I had to go back and not put blame or guilt on the situation, and saying, I acknowledge that for you, historically, generationally, this is how we were raised, that you thought you were protecting me. You thought
That's
you were
right.
shielding me.
That's what they told you too.
Yeah. And that can be true. And this is how that protection impacted me. And it still
That's
does.
right.
And this is the why. Once I gave the fullness of that, it opened up my mom to just share so much, but she also embraced me in that moment. And it felt like she was embracing the 5-year-old.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Right? So that's healing. That's healing. And it shows up again in the love and the nurturing in our relationship now. But I had to get the fullness of it. Because if you don't, for some people, it could come off as accusatory, right? And that isn't what I'm hearing that you're saying, is being able to say, I remember the embrace, and
Right. It was the 1-2.
was the one too. Yeah. And I think when you put language on that, it causes the person that's receiving this to say, aha, aha. Because
And
it
then open them
felt like
up to share.
protection.
That's great feedback. Thank you.
It was out of protection. And sometimes we have to just have those hard conversations, because they are hard. I remember when, sharing with my mom for the first time, that I was molested. It was hard because she was out serving her country. And the first thing she asked me was, where was I? Where was I? Where was I? So it's being able to share the fullness of it to say, yes, you were out serving your country and you left me here. And this is what happened. And again, two things can be true, and it helps take off like that shame and that guilt to just stand in your truth. Because I always say, what is tolerable for one person may be terminal for the next. And what is terminal for one person may be tolerable for someone else. But for that situation, she may not have seen it as terminal. It was just like, this is something that you should have been able to tolerate. But our minds are all different. It's very complex and it's reality of things. So being able to say, no, that was terminal for me.
Right.
And
Well,
this is
it's
why.
changed things because it taught me to, no matter what, put on a pretty face, put on that red lip, show up your best, no matter what's going on inside. But it also is, that's how I've taught the boys. No one really talks.
And that's the conversation that
And
needs to
that's the
be had.
challenge.
Yeah, this is what that action taught me. This is what
And
that.
how it's gone on generationally. So sharing news of a traumatic, well, of a situation, a change affects children differently, right? But it's not, they haven't found their use of language yet. And so that's an opportunity. So I'm looking at it as an opportunity for change and for, giving that gift over time.
And what you just described is the definition of reparenting. You know, we all go through the stage of reparenting, and it's not a reflection of how we were raised. It's being able to say that I'm an individual with my own shared values, and beliefs, and being able to take from how you were raised, what works for you in your now, in the generations to follow, and what doesn't. One of the things that, you know, in reparenting within my family is language, is affection, is being able to embrace our humanity. And that shifts. And we always talk about in here generational trauma. And I said, but now we're giving room for generational healing. We're shifting. That's what the Sunrise Project is all about, is shifting from generational trauma to generational healing. And how do we do this where we all feel supported, where we all feel valued and seen, and we don't have to suffer in silence? We don't have to suffer in silence anymore.
That's right. That's right. And you mentioned earlier having a group of women that get together around or got together around a particular topic. And you're exactly right. That is what Sunrise is all about. A space for people to come together to learn to accept and have courage and know the difference and have that wisdom. So I want to make sure
Oh,
we
a lot
don't.
of comments out here. So someone just said, I agree. I realized that the lack of affection I received as a child showed up with my relationship as an adult. Yeah. And all of those things show up in how we are in like gathering our, you know, intimate relationships, our parenting. When you have a lack of something, something that wasn't met as a child, it shows up in your relationships because it's a mirror. Our relationships are a mirror. Our parenting is a mirror. It shows up. So when you ask the question about my inner child, we have to give that little boy and girl inside of us an opportunity to cry and to feel because it shows up. And that's something
Right.
that reparenting does, that because affection wasn't shown in my household, once I understood the why, we started having conversations. I said, ah, that's what happened to you. Because that's what happened to your childhood, it robbed you of that nurturing spirit because someone took it from you. So
That's right.
it shows up generationally. So now that we're fostering these conversations and I understand the why, I'm able to heal my inner child, but now I'm able to take that and nurture and cultivate something within my children that I didn't have because now that I healed my inner child, I can what shift from that generational trauma mentality to generational healing. So when Cherise said that about it showing up in my relationships as an adult, it stems back from inner childhood wounds.
That's right. Everything goes back to childhood. That's the bottom line. Everything.
It really does. And that's why I'm so intentional now with the boys. Because do we always get it right as parents? No, we don't. We don't. We don't. And one of the other things that I'm realizing is that let me be intentional so that I'm raising boys that don't have to heal from their childhood. How can
Exactly.
I do that in my now? And again, is that us being perfect? No, that's a fallacy. Even like I said, that Superwoman, Superman complex, you don't remember anything else. Take off that cape and just wrap yourself around it as a blanket, because that cape never belonged to us. Superwoman, Superman, it's a fallacy. It's a cartoon. It's made up anyway. None of us are, right? So giving yourself permission, to go back to your childhood if you need to. Knowing
Yes.
that that little girl needs to cry, that little boy needs to
Yes. And get resolution and move on. Yeah. And open up that conversation. I love everything you've said this morning. It has been so powerful. You are amazing. And I'm so grateful that you are here with us today. I want to see if anybody wants to make a comment one more time before we wrap up for this gorgeous Sunday. Any comments from anybody else? Or notes or questions for Candace? People are quiet today. And that's okay. That's okay too. Yeah, I don't see anyone coming off of mute. Well, I would ask one last question for me before we wrap up with Dr. Vicky. If you could get any time back at all, is there anything you would do differently? Or is your life perfect where it is? Yeah.
I wouldn't do anything differently. I just believe that where I am today and who I am today is a testament of every single experience that I have endured. There's a very familiar scripture in the Bible that says that it was good that I was afflicted. I never understood that growing up. I'm like, how could it be good that I was afflicted? Who wants to be afflicted? But I realized that every single experience has led me here. It's led me to sunrise. It's led me to connecting with Dr. Vicky and to you, Kelly, and to now being a part of this amazing community. It led me here. If I would have changed anything differently, I don't know if I would be here.
Exactly.
So I genuinely wouldn't change not a single thing, not the marriage, not the children, not the divorce, not the, just nothing. And
Exactly.
even in that, and saying I wouldn't change anything, are there things that have transpired in my life that I'm like, oh, I sometimes I think I'm like, I wish I never experienced that. Yeah, we're human, but would I say I would go back and erase it? Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Because
No.
every single thing that I've gone through is giving me language for every single person that I have the opportunity to pour into, gives me the opportunity to be poured back into, because being with you all today has poured back into me. This isn't a transactional community. You pour out and you are poured back into. So I wouldn't change anything. And I think sometimes when I sit in that, it does bring tears to my eyes, because it reminds me that I'm graced for this life that I've been blessed to live. And if I go through anything as I move forward, it allows me to know that I have the power within me to overcome it, So I wouldn't change anything. I really wouldn't.
Perfect. The perfect way to end it. Have the power within me to overcome anything. And Charisse has agreed. I feel like the experiences and situations were put on us for a reason. Yes, maybe a lesson to help you propel and advocate for others. Absolutely. And someone else just says, thank you. You are amazing. I echo that sentiment. Amazing.
Thank you all for being here. Like I said, it's so healing and therapeutic for all of us to just be in a space like this where we can just be honest and share and allow ourselves to be human and know that we're still dope. We are still amazing in all of our beautiful and magnificent ways. We are. And we're remembering the duality here. Duality is healthy. I say that all the time.
Yes.
I can be amazing. I can be dope. I can be gifted. I can be talented. I can be all of these things and still have my human experiences and my
Yes.
response. And we need to hear that. We need to hear that. And we also need to live it. And it takes us in doing our work, because people are watching. People are watching how we raise these babies. People are watching how we're feeling and how we still showing up. And when you give people the truth,
The truth.
say every day, I don't want to put on, like you said, Kelly, this lipstick and this makeup. Every day I don't want to. And
Right.
that's okay.
And it's okay.
And that's okay.
It's perfect. It's better than okay. And our kids are perfect the way they are. We're perfect the way we are. And the sooner we get to that space, the better for all of us, right? You have been such a blessing for me this morning. Someone just said I'm grateful for you. Grateful for the speaker and the message today. Thank you. You are such a beautiful soul and a blessing to us all. Yes, you are.
And right back at you. I really appreciate being here, Kelly. And I really hope this isn't the last time. It's my first
We will have lots more with you. If you will be back, we would love to have you back.
for sure.
And I'd love to now shift over to Dr. Vicki Johnson, who introduced me to you. And thank you to Dr. Vicki.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Vicky.
She's so amazing. So amazing. She's going to close us out. Thank you again.
Yes, I am. Thank you, Candace. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you for just pouring so much wisdom into us today. You know, I was thinking as you were sharing about the poem that was posted in our kitchen when I was a child. And I encourage everyone to just go look it up on Google and read it. And it's called Children Learn What They Live. Children Learn What They Live. And I refer to that often. And to the parents here, we do the best we can with what we have. And then it's an opportunity for us to grow and pour and share with others. So, God, we thank you for this beautiful day that you have given to us. And we are grateful for the opportunity to turn our pain into power, our trauma into triumph, the things that we did not understand into wisdom, and our longings into lessons that will empower, inspire, encourage, and edify others. Bless Candace, bless her journey, bless every open door that she walks through to be able to impact others with not only her knowledge and expertise, but her experience and her journey. Thank you for Kelly and the Sunrise Project and for the work that we do that is good seed in the ground, that at the appointed time it will sprout up and produce fruit. Now bless us as we go into the rest of this day. We give you glory for these things. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Couldn't end better. Thank you, Dr. Vicky, for that. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Candace. Have an amazing, beautiful, wonderful day. We'll see you next Sunday at 9. Have a good day,
Bye,
everyone.
everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you.